Welcome to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today, and we'll take your calls, 410-662-8780, toll-free 866-661-9309, or you can email us, formanwolf@wypr.org. And Cindy?
Tony, you have an Orioles t-shirt on
I
today.
I do. I'm
hopeful. I like that. That's pretty cool. I've never seen you wear that.
A new year, new season, that's...
All right, yeah, here we go.
That's a big
deal. Good luck to them.
I've only been a fan since... I think I became aware of the Orioles in 1969 or something like that.
Wow. Well, that's good. Yeah. It's nice to live here.
In which case, we got killed by the Mets.
Uh-oh.
And my favorite food were Nilla wafers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. It's been a long time since I had one of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nothing makes me want them again, but, but boy, I loved them in 1969. So we're hoping that... We often talk about things that happen to us, or places we eat when we travel, or doing research for work that we do. And I spent a lot of time last week with you grilling me on all things Italian, and I was very happy to do that. There, yeah, you enjoy it again. You have no more calorie intake.
It's nice to relive a trip.
Absolutely, and so you are welcome to give us a call. We were talking about it, and it'd be very interesting to hear from listeners. If they've been to and they had a remarkable, you know, food journey or food experience on a travel of theirs, whether it was good or whether it was perhaps terrifying or what you expected, not what you expected, it would just be interesting to hear. And you can reach us 410-662-8780.
I also have this great desire someday, if I could take the time, to drive across the country and hit like all the fun roadside places. I know a lot of people have done that. I just think that would be such a great American experience to see some of the old diners and take photographs and just, you know, talk to the people and sit down and really be a part of, you know, that area's culture and experiences and hear people talk. I would love to do that someday.
It would be fascinating. I would have my grandmother on my shoulder the entire time.
Why?
Telling me you don't just eat at some roadside place.
Oh, that's no fun. I can't believe Toto would say that. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Aw. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I would love to do that sometime. So I was thinking we should talk about some, you know, get into some recipes and sort of foundation, like foundation soup or, you know, how do you work with beans? How do you work with rice?
Soups are what people want to be. It's funny. Like January comes and people want soup. We watch it happen in restaurants immediately. The chill actually hits and everyone buys soup. At home, everyone wants to. It's a meal that's based on often a heavy soup and the things that go with that. So how about some soup basics? What's an excellent soup that is that centerpiece of a meal for a family?
I think a leek and potato soup is a good foundation soup to master, and then you can just add to it and change it, whether it's through garnish or through new ingredients. So you can kind of elevate it. It's an inexpensive soup to make, easily accessible product, and you can take it from groundwork to elevate it if you want to, or you can just make it inexpensively a whole lot of different ways. There's so much you can do with a leek and potato soup.
You want to go through the steps and maybe point out a couple of pitfalls, because everyone doesn't work for leeks, for example.
Right. So one of the things, basic thing to learn about leeks is that you want the tops to be bright green, very fresh looking, and great condition. And the white part should be nice and white looking. So you want fresh leeks. They should be crispy. The only thing to worry about with working with leeks is they grow in sandy soil, and they really take on a lot of sand, basically, or dirt. So you want to wash them really well. So since you're going to be sauteing and pureeing them
apart.
Yeah, since you're going to be sauteing and pureeing them anyway, you might as well cut the heck out of them. So just, you know, slice them right down the center. I do separate the white from the green part, the top part, and put the green part on the side because I actually add it to my soup at the end. And there are a lot of vitamins and minerals in leeks are super good for you. And so we're going to use the entire leek, which is great. Why waste something? And there are a couple of different things you can do with the tops as well. So whether you add it to the soup at the end or you julienne it really fine and crisp it up in some corn oil. So anyway, foundation soup. So saute leeks, shallots, onion, and butter. And you do not want any color. So you're in a stainless steel pot. As we always say, heavy bottom stainless steel pot. Stainless steel because it won't react with the acids or anything that you're working with.
Relatively low heat.
Low heat. So you're doing it on, let's say, medium heat. Melt the butter. Add your onion and shallot first. Then add the leeks and work that until it's nicely sweated, translucent. And just, you know, you're just stirring that with a wooden spoon or some sort of spoon. And as that begins to soften up, then go ahead and add a good chicken stock, which I'm going to, later after I finish this idea, I'm going to tell you how to make a quick chicken stock so that you do have a good stock in house. But if you're going to use a purchase stock, just be aware of the salt content. That's the main thing you need to be concerned with. Does it have salt? If so, be careful with what you add to it. This is not something that gets reduced. So that's the other good thing about if you are going to use a store-bought stock, you don't have to worry about reducing it and too much salt in the soup. So once you've added stock to cover the potatoes, you've added diced potatoes. I would use Zukon Golds. I think, you know, a good ratio is probably about six to seven cups of liquid, about 2 cups of like large dice of potatoes. I would peel them and just cut them into big pieces. You want them to be uniform because you want them to cook at the same time.
And this is with how many leeks?
I would say one bunch of leeks would be fine. I would do one onion, and I would do probably 4 shallots, for maybe about 1/2 cup. What would end up to be about 1/2 cup of shallots?
So all 3 of those onion products are what's sweated in the bottom of the pan.
Right, onion,
shallot,
leeks.
You've added the stock, 6 cups of stock.
Yep, and then add the potatoes. And I like to add just a pinch of cayenne, a pinch of freshly ground nutmeg, a decent amount of freshly ground black pepper. And again, if you're using your own stock, add a little bit of salt, but don't oversalt it from the beginning. And then you may add a little bit of cream. So you can make the soup without cream. So
you can stop before you add the cream?
No, you can add the cream now. So or you can add it later. You can actually do it either way. Maybe you want to taste it and see if you really want to add the cream later. That's the beauty of this soup. You could also make the soup where you cut everything uniform and don't puree it. That also makes a great soup. You know, do a small dice or medium dice of the potato. Do a nice uniform small dice of all the onion product and just have this beautiful leek and potato soup. And that's a little more hearty, a little more family friendly perhaps, but it becomes a little bit more elegant when you puree it. And then again,
how long would you cook everything in that soup?
That's the other great thing. I mean, you can have the soup done in 20, 25 minutes once you've sauteed everything and put everything together. It really doesn't take long. You just actually you could probably have it done in 15 minutes. You just want the potatoes to soften. You want the flavors to come together. So let's just say 15
to 20
minutes.
Essentially when the potatoes
minutes.
Are cooked,
yeah, you're ready
done.
To go. Yeah. So then you can make that decision if you want to add the cream. Check your seasoning at the end. Maybe add a little bit more salt, see what it needs. And then go into, I cannot tell you how wonderful it is to have a great blender. I think that is, if you're able to buy one of the high speed blenders, it really does puree everything into oblivion. And so if you think about it, in the end, you don't lose any product. So it's almost worth it to have the really great blender.
Yeah. So we're live today and taking calls, 410-662-8780. What we asked for were any stories that you have about food when you were traveling, or if there are other questions that you have about food or wine or spirits that we can in any way help with. And actually, let's take a call. We have Al in Baltimore County. Al, you're on the air?
Yes, sir.
Hi, Al.
Afternoon.
All right, how's it going?
Good.
This is the first time I've called you folks.
Well, good. Thank you for calling.
All right. I want to, two things I want to talk to you about. One, I went to England 20 years ago.
Awesome.
And I had food at London, in the pubs and what have you, in the restaurants, and I enjoyed it.
Good. I believe you. That doesn't seem surprising to me.
London's food reputation from the 60s and 70s are...
It's a little unfair.
Is not deserved to hang on. There's a gigantic, like cosmopolitan, honestly very wealthy city full of people that have high food expectations.
Mm. Well, I was in 1997, and it was magnificent.
So what did you eat?
I had vegetable soup, prawns, sun-dried tomatoes, and other wonderful things.
Very good.
Very good.
And I've got a question about olives. I'm an olive lover from way back.
Okay.
I was first introduced to olives when I was at the Maryland School for the Blind. I was 6 years old. Now, in 1961, my mother found me a large jar of olives still on the floor, of queen-size olives. They were huge, and it lasted from December to February. Now, where can you get those today?
The
They were
the jar of olives.
You described them as
they were queen size. Yes.
Queen.
Oh, the great big ones.
Yeah, you can buy.
They're big ones. Yeah, and they were the jar. They stood on the floor, not on a table, but on the floor.
Wow.
They were that large.
I've never heard of. Well, I mean, that's cool.
Honestly, that sounds like the olives that we would get to use in restaurants when I was a kid. And they were like they're called colossal stuffers or something.
Okay, all right.
And I think they still mostly are coming from the Central Valley of California.
Anywhere you can buy those jars today?
You know, the
maybe delis.
Delis, or maybe take a look for some of the old brands of sort of Italian pantry goods like like Cento or Son of Italy.
Uh-huh.
Look for some of the olives in that packaging. I bet you those are similar to the ones that you're talking about, though they may not retail the jars that size.
Mm-hmm.
You may have to literally go to a restaurant supplier.
Do you just eat the olives, or do you make them into things with your food?
Oh, I love it. I can eat them with anything.
Yeah.
I had it the first time, I had one with Spanish rice.
Oh, all right. There you go.
And a salad.
So how many olives do you think you can eat in one sitting, Alan?
Do you really want to know?
Yes.
Yeah.
10.
10? Oh.
You have a great voice, Al, by the way.
Thank you. I can sit me at a table with olives, potato chips, and something to drink, and I'm in third heaven.
There you go.
That's
all right.
Yeah, that's an old-fashioned proper way to take a break. Well, thanks for the call, Al.
Yeah,
okay,
nice to talk with you. Thank you.
Right now.
So, olives.
Cool.
His affection is certain.
Oh, he's very.
But his capacity, happy.
Nice enthusiasm.
Love you.
Yeah.
10 olives, that's moderate.
Hey, what are those? What are those olives that we use with the Italian food? Kessel. I always forget what they're called. Those are my favorites.
The green Castelvetrano.
That. Oh my gosh, he should get some of those if he can
find
them.
You like them better than the tagliacci?
I love both of those. Those are my two favorite, and then, you know, the easier to find Pichelin olives. Good quality Pichelins, good quality
Mortadellas.
I don't think I've had that.
No.
I don't remember those.
Like Raggiolos?
Oh, gosh, Tony.
No, I'm sorry.
Stop
anyway,
it.
We come back on Formidable Fun Food and Wine. We'll be taking your calls, 410-662-8780, or emails formanwolf@wipr.org. Cindy Wolf is doing some recipe basics. And maybe we'll fancy up that potato soup we were talking about.
Yes, we will.
And in a few segments, we're going to have to deal with the chef's challenge, so hopefully Chef had a good breakfast. All of that or more on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today on WIPR, taking calls and emails. You can reach us 410-662-8780, toll free 866-661-9309, or email us foremanwolf@wipr.org. And let's go to Ann in Annapolis. Ann?
Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So I wanted to talk a little bit about a trip I took to France a couple years ago, and I was guided by a book, so I want to tell you a little bit about that trip and then ask for a recommendation on perhaps a similar book for another travel destination.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So my husband and I decided to, spur of the moment, take a trip to France. He was in Senegal and I was here. And we met in Paris, rented a car, and all we had was Patricia Wells' Food Lover's Guide to France.
That's good, though.
It was a good start, right. And so what we decided to do was head for the Loire, and we ended up in the Loire during the Vendange.
Good.
Which was amazing. Yeah.
They were kind of busy while you were there.
Right, and that was what made it so fun. And so we had really no plans. We got this car and we drove around the Loire with Food Lover's Guide to France.
You
really
drove down the river surrounded by castles.
Yes, yes. And then we ended up in a sort of an ancien régime région called the Solange. And we kind of never left. We just kind of drove around the Solange and we went to different food festivals. We ended up driving into Sancerre and seeing overhead the banner for their oyster festival, which was in the Cave. And
how fun.
It was just serendipitous. It was really wonderful. I have a photo of my husband with this grin on his face, trying to drive. He's so excited.
May I stop you for a second and ask a very important question?
Yeah, sure, sure.
Did anyone ever produce this movie?
Yeah, that is pretty amazing.
Because you should be selling the script.
Right? You're living the fantasy life there.
It was a pretty good trip. Yeah, it was a pretty good trip. And we knew...
Did something dire happen after the Oyster Festival? Stop. I can't wait to find out.
Nothing dire happened, man.
Oh.
So we took a similar trip to southern Spain. Again, no plans. So we didn't have a book at that point, but we did end up in some really interesting places. We got a chip for our phone and just kind of drove around. And we had one experience at a bullfight where my husband accidentally, we moved here from New Orleans, so it was New Orleans parade reaction. He accidentally caught the ear that was thrown at the end of the fight. Yeah, right. And you
it's
know,
very good luck.
Oh, my.
It was very good luck, and everyone was excited for us.
For
and
bowl.
I looked at him, and I said, Marcel, what are you doing? Because his name is Marcel. And he said, I don't know. It was just a reaction. So now we're standing there
just
in
put
the bowl
in
ring, and people are cheering. We've got the ear. And then clearly he looked distressed, and so a woman behind us handed us a couple of tissues, and we stayed in the arena until everyone left because we thought we can't leave and throw this away.
No.
So we walked around this little town until we found a garbage bin that no one could see, and then we got rid of the ear because we couldn't travel home with it.
That's probably 7 years of bad luck or something.
Yeah, something I don't know.
Yeah, that's don't.
Wow,
yeah.
That's a great. You're
don't
yeah,
use
you're
your
a
real
traveler.
Names.
I don't think you need a book. it seems like you know
well,
what you're doing.
So here's my question.
And
Food
you're
Lovers
brave.
Guide to France, that worked out really well.
Mm-hmm.
Anya von Bremsen's New Spanish Table, that kind of helped us when we were in Spain, in the southern coast of Spain. So any suggestions for a book that would kind of give us some direction on where to go next?
The best books are the Michelin guides.
I'm going to differ with you a little bit.
Going to argue now. Yeah.
Okay. No. The Michelin Guide is a French publication. It is the best guide in France.
Well, okay. Yes, for France.
Having recently tried to use a little bit to find new restaurants in Italy, because instead of just going to a lot of the same places,
being there
recently in research, going to several starred restaurants to see what they were doing. The quality levels were wildly varied. So
wow.
I think it really probably depends a lot upon where you are. I think in France, and I think we've also found in Spain, relatively reliable.
Yes.
In Italy, I would look for, see if you can find the Gambero Rosso. Okay. Literally the red shrimp.
Yeah, sure.
There's a publishing company, the Slow Food Editore.
Yeah.
All right, and the Slow Food Guide is also very helpful. If you follow their guidelines, though, you will need to take a year off to eat your way through Italy because there's a million little details. You know, it's kind of like, let's celebrate the zucchinis of this town. There are seven different dishes. You can't leave the town without trying, and they're in these different places. And you have to talk to this guy because Frank grows the very best of the flowers, and he'll tell you only where he'll sell them after dark when you buy him a Campari, you know. So there is good detail in those guys.
Okay.
Well, then the good thing about the Michelin Guide, particularly for France, is that you know you're getting hotel suggestions too. So it's food and travel, all your travel, and they have route guides as well. So it's the little green, I think they're called the Green Circle books, but I forget. Those books are really
great.
The Green Guides. Yeah, those are great companion pieces to the food and hotel guide.
To the Red Guide.
Yeah, because it has maps and everything that you can need. So to me, and I don't recall using a Michelin guide now that you say that when we were in Italy. So, so with France, that's definitely the answer.
By like the fourth day on this particular trip, I just took it and threw it in the trunk. I'm like,
okay,
nah,
there you go.
You guys make me crazy.
Well, and also the other thing is if you have any interest in the markets also, and I don't know off the top of my head, I've had this book for many, many years, but the ladies did update it, but these two women wrote a book about all the markets everywhere in France. And it has a nice guide in the back that tells you what days, what towns, you know, a quick little snapshot. So if that's something you're interested in as well, we'll put that on the website.
Yeah, cool.
Because it's really a gift. And there's some recipes in there too. And a lot of history in there. So it's a fantastic book. So I'll make sure you can have access to that. That's a good one.
Oh, that's great. So, Tony and Cindy, then, if we think Italy, mm-hmm. where should we start?
That's so diverse.
Mm-hmm. I know.
It depends how fast you want to move and what season of the year. And I mean,
Why don't you give her one shot of.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think I can give you 10 different trips.
Do you prefer the northern part of Italy or the south or the middle?
I think people don't know until.
Yeah. Have you ever been there?
Yes.
Have you been to the north?
Mostly in the north.
Oh, that's my favorite area.
Mostly in the north.
So then you should.
I think really remarkable places to get to food-wise. In the northwest, Piemonte, Liguria, and the Valle d'Aosta are all super interesting, incredibly different. Mm-hmm. Piemonte is large and varied. That would make, depending upon the time that you have, a really terrific trip, because you will definitely get from mountains to sea there.
Okay.
You'll see most of the best cheese of Italy. You'll see an awful lot of the best wine that's in Italy, especially a lot of the wines that the Italians will describe as, and I can't do really air quotes on the radio, but important. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great trip for someone who really wants to understand sort of like that whole corner of things. I think Friuli is fascinating. The Friulani way of cooking and the Friulani organization of the table is a little bit different than the rest of Italy. And there is, that's part of Friuli is in Italy and part is in Slovenia.
Mm-hmm.
That area is remarkable.
It really is interesting.
That area from the Veneto that everyone forgets besides Venice and probably Verona, a lot of the Veneto up through the Dolomites is a remarkable trip. You know, you can enjoy the lakes, but also get up to the Austrian border and cross it. And there's lots and lots of great places to eat. And frankly, that's a fantastic travel value. And if you're going midsummer, when an awful lot of people are going to a lot of the famous cities, this is cool and beautiful and sunny in the daytime and a little bit cool at night. And that's if you're outdoorsy at all, that can be remarkable, but it is not monuments and cities. It's beautiful nature and small towns and very good little wineries and small, terrific hotels.
That sounds terrific. That's a great recommendation.
Thank you so much for the call, Anne.
Yes. Yeah, thank you.
Well, nice to talk with you.
I really enjoy your program, and as I mentioned, I moved here from Louisiana, from New Orleans. Mm. Wasn't sure what I'd find in this town, but it's going pretty well.
Good.
Awesome.
Thanks, Anne.
Glad you're here.
Thank you.
So you can reach us, 410-662-8780, or email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. So let's double back and let's talk about different ways to finish that soup, because you mm-hmm. have that potato soup done.
Mm-hmm. And one of the other things you can do to it is add cauliflower to it. It is a very pretty cauliflower soup, so I would make it exactly the same way. Just add
add the cauliflower when you add the potato.
Mm-hmm. And just wash it well, cut it into large pieces, and add it, and puree that. And another thought would be to still have the potato leek soup, but garnish it with a little bit of crispy bacon and Stilton on top, which would be really good.
Ooh, I was thinking like either creme fraiche or sour cream.
Oh, there's
and
like a
bacon.
Million. Wow. Yeah, there's so many things you could do. Or you could add the bacon and the Stilton to the soup as well, and puree it. So you could use it as a garnish.
Of course
I would do that. Or you could add fresh artichokes to the soup. This is a good foundation soup for fresh artichoke soup. And if I was going to add artichokes, I would drop out the cream completely, add a little bit of Reggiano cheese and a little bit of fresh lemon and a touch of olive oil to the soup when I was pureeing it. So absolutely no cream with the artichokes. And then that's a really gorgeous soup. The Reggiano helps to give the feeling, obviously, of cream. But it also gives it a little level of acidity, and which is nice. With the artichokes, just love acid, lemon juice, whatever. So that's a good one. And then I was also thinking about just talking. I said I would say how you make chicken stock too.
Yeah.
So a good chicken stock, if you are just using it for soup and not turning it into sauce.
Making white chicken stock or brown chicken stock. People don't always have the difference in their mind.
I always make brown chicken stock. I prefer the roasted flavor of the bones. And I use backs and necks to make stock. You could certainly use wings. You could certainly make a broth and use legs and thighs and pull that meat off and use it for a salad or for dinner, or, you know, for whatever you'd like to make for the family.
Tacos.
Tacos or chicken corn soup or anything good. But to brown the bones, you want to remove the fat after the bones have browned and then add carrot, celery, and onion and a large dice. Let's say for, you know, maybe you're doing one good size, you know, 2 gallons of stock. You'd probably want 4 carrots, 2 onions, half a head of celery. I would add a few peppercorns, say 10 black peppercorns, 4 bay leaves, and a pinch of dried thyme, and then just cover everything with water, bring it up to a boil. Once it comes up to a boil, immediately turn it down to the lowest of simmers. So the ideal is 1 bubble breaking the surface every second. And you want to skim anything that's rising to the top in the form of scum or fat. You want to keep your stock clear. And fat, obviously, is what keeps your stock from being clear. And just cook it for 4 to 5, 6, even 7 hours very slowly, and then strain it, and you should have beautiful stock. Now, if you're trying to make a sauce from it, I would add veal bones. So I would do...
In addition to the chicken bones.
Yeah, I would do...
what kind of
ratio? Brown the veal leg bones, and you want them to be split so that the marrow is accessible. And I would do 3-to-1 chicken bones to veal bones. And I prefer the flavor of the chicken bones, which is why I make chicken stock. The veal helps to give the sauce viscosity.
Yeah, it gives you a little bit more of a base note too, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that. We have an email question here. The basic question for the show, if you're willing and able to answer... can you recommend a recipe for a tomato and mushroom-free pasta sauce? I'm thinking like a white wine butter type sauce for someone with allergies to both.
Mushrooms and tomatoes.
So without mushrooms and tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I think that there's plenty of, we don't often see a lot of tomato-free, or we don't think immediately in the States of that, but one of my favorites that I end up making for my daughter once in a while that I love is pasta, like, and some kind of a fat little shape, like gnocchi does very well for it. Or you could just do strozzoparetti or something, or gemelli or farfalle. You need stock for that. And usually for pasta, it's white chicken stock that you usually use.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to very slowly, just like you did before, caramelize an onion or caramelize a shallot. And you want to have blanched carrots, very fine dice, or not quite brunoise, but very fine dice of carrots,
mm-hmm.
but plentiful. And have that ready to go. Get that in that with the onions, once the onions are caramelized, hot, and already seasoned. And add white chicken stock to that. And then your hot pasta out of the salted pasta water into that. And then just plenty of butter. And if you want, you can do just a little bit of brown butter with fresh sage. Off on the side in another pan.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes in the pan. Toss all of that. Give it a tiny bit of vinegar, just like neutral, even just a little bit of apple cider vinegar is not bad in that application. Or if you have white balsamico, and give that a toss. But that's easy for a child, also a nice sophisticated sort of a first course, a middle course, and a nice basic for this time of the year. But you have to have really good carrots. If you don't have really good carrots,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't taste like anything.
Sure. So getting back to sort of some basic things, I was thinking I would go over French onion soup. And now that you have a good stock recipe with French onion soup, this is a perfect time of the year for it. And it's another great way to feed the family, because easily you could just have French onion soup and a great salad together for dinner. I think that's a great Sunday night dinner. And you bring out a wide bottom pot. You need a large surface area, and you need the pan to be very hot. Again, it's got to be a good quality pot, because you don't want you're basically turning on a pot with nothing in it and getting extremely hot, and you don't want it to affect the quality of the pot where it would bow or something. So you, once the pot is very, very hot, you put just a tiny bit of a neutral oil like corn oil in, but just a little bit, barely enough to even coat the bottom of the pan. You could put the onions in dry, but I'm not going to tell you to do that. I'm a little worried about someone that may not have a lot of cooking experience doing something like that. So you want to very thinly slice your onions. So cut, you know, cut your onion, peel your onion, cut it in half, lay it on the board and thinly slice it, almost paper thin. And put them in that pan, and you need that wide surface area and high heat so that those onions begin to brown. You do not want to burn them. There's a difference between burning and browning. And just work them, toss them around, and you need a lot of onions. So for I would actually say 3/4 of a onion per person. And just let those work. Let them brown, work, you know, keep moving them around in the pan, and then very right at the very end, add a little bit of salt and a little bit of sugar and work them again, and then deglaze with your brown chicken and veal stock and add a little bit of cognac, a little bit of red wine, and a little bit of pepper. And you could put a bay leaf in, maybe a couple of peppercorns in a sachet, something you can grab back out of the pot.
You may have to quantify a little bit.
What? Quantify what?
A little bit. Does that mean a teaspoon? Does that mean a
cup? Oh, a little bit. A little bit of, what did I say? A little bit of sugar and salt?
No, you said cognac and red wine.
Oh. half a cup of red wine and probably 2 tablespoons of cognac.
Okay.
And let it work. You want all the flavors to develop. And then the garnish, the traditional garnish, of course, is day-old bread. So you want to make your toast points or croutons. So if you're, let's say you're using baguette, you do a slice or two, whatever's going to cover the top of, if you have a lion's head terrine, which is what the soup is traditionally served in, typically 1 or 2 pieces of baguette will be perfect for that. And then you just toast those with butter in the oven and put that on top of the soup. And then you can use Conte cheese, Gruyere cheese, or Reggiano, or a combination of all of them, and be really generous with that. Put that on top. And then the fun thing is figuring out how to brown it at home. And you can do it if you have a broiler. That's what you need. So you put it under a broiler, and that is how you brown the top. But that's a great soup for a winter day.
That sounds awfully good.
It sounds like it just rang the bell.
It's been, yeah. The soup rings the bell, Cindy. Dreary days like we've been having, that will work very well.
Mm-hmm.
So we are still taking calls from you, 410-662-8780, or emails, foremanwolf@wipr.org. We'd love to hear, and we've already heard a couple of terrific food,
nice
travel stories, questions. So we'll do that. We'll get into a chef's challenge. And a bit more foolishness on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And let's go right to our caller, Ted in Baltimore.
Hi, Ted.
Good afternoon.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
Good afternoon.
Hey, so
I'm
tell
great.
Us your story.
You?
Good, thanks.
So I wanted to connect a couple of dots, talk about soup, and talk about pozole in Mexico City.
Okay.
That sounds
so
cool.
I was in Mexico City last year at this time, and had pozole, 2 different kinds of pozole in 2 different places. One in a part of town called Coyoacan, which is a really cool old historical part of town. Had a great red pozole in a little food courty kind of place, local guy. And then later in the weekend, went to a really cool spot that was originally established as a dormitory for teachers, and the folks that did the cooking for them would always cook a family meal, and it would always be pozole. And so now they make a green style Guerrero from the state of Guerrero pozole in this place, and they only do it on weekends, but it's very family oriented, and that kind of travel, that kind of soup would be awesome. I don't know to get that in Baltimore in a really good place, but
that's
enjoyed it, and I thought it would be good for your show.
Oh, that's awesome, Ted. That's I tell you what, that green pozole I've had a few times, just in people's homes who are from Guerrero, that live here in Baltimore now. And that stuff is awesome.
It's spectacular.
You have to be a little bit careful if someone decides to give you the high test. You know, that's, I just mean the spicy elements, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's which I truly love, but.
But you don't know.
The green pozole has it's very herbaceous. There are a lot of herbs in there. I don't even know. I assume that some of the herbs are things like epazote and a couple other things that you can get locally. But I don't know what else creates that green broth versus the red pozole that's more typical throughout Mexico. But both are just a fantastic dish and would be perfect on a day like today. So
if you absolutely be great today. You can definitely get some of those things in some of the Latin American and Mexican provision stores.
Mm-hmm.
That are owned and operated by folks from Mexico or from different parts of Latin America, whether in Fells Point or in other areas around the state.
Yep.
So, well, thanks. Thanks for the call,
great.
Ted.
Thanks.
Have a good Sunday.
Sure. Appreciate the thoughts. Oh, God. Yeah, I love that soup. That's it's going to make me crazy. Now I'm going to have to bother. I know exactly who I want to bother to make that soup.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, we know a couple of people from.
You know, we've never had the soup from is Mrs. Ubaldo.
Oh, well, when he was talking about green, I think about when Ubaldo makes salsa for us. And the first time he made it, I think he put, I think for a 6-pan, which is what, a quart, I think he put 15 jalapeno peppers in there. And I came in, waltzed into the kitchen. I waltzed in. I'm like, oh, this looks so good. And yeah, I'm like, that's the hottest thing I've ever tasted in my life.
You're years removed from your Midwestern palate.
Well, I'm used to it now. Not that, but I'm used to spicy food now, and I love it. So
yeah,
I actually crave it now.
Yeah, that's right. You're not in Indiana anymore.
No, definitely not. or North Carolina, for that matter.
Yeah, no question. Should we get involved in a chef challenge here?
Go ahead.
All right.
Your first,
please,
Tony.
No, please.
Oh, ladies first.
Okay. Yes, right, take your time. Okay. Enjoy yourself.
Oh, boy. Mussels,
and
crawfish,
you can see
tails,
the mission
jalapeno
is
peppers. Yes. Oh, it's a tapa
You have
party.
People over for tapas.
Oh, goody. I love that. Okay. All right, cool. Jalapeno peppers, crawfish tails, mussels, Jerusalem artichokes, black beans, pig's feet, red wine vinegar, palm oil, which I love, tangerines, hazelnuts. I hate hazelnuts. Tony knows this. Endives, bitter chocolate. What's something dairy, chicken stock, and what's this? Oh, baking supplies, is that what that says?
Yes.
Okay,
why not
porque no. Crawfish tails, jalapeno peppers are going to go together with black beans, so I'll cook the black beans. Do I have peppers? Jalapenos. All right, so with the I'm gonna saute. Do I have other ingredients? You didn't give me like any onions or anything.
You may have.
I have
onion.
A normal pantry. All right.
You have a normal pantry.
All right. I'm going to saute onions and add the jalapeno peppers. And I'm going to put a little bit of palm oil in there and add the black beans and cook the black beans until they're tender. And that's going to be, actually, I'm going to make a little, almost like a puree, just a black bean puree, not even sauce, like thick. I want it to be thick. And then I'll gently saute the crawfish tails and I'll steam open the mussels and I'll use some of the liquor from the mussel cooking liquid and just sort of reduce that down and finish it with a little bit of cold butter, just monte au beurre, which means to lift with butter, and toss the mussel meat and the crawfish tails together with a little bit of that sauce and sit it on the pureed black beans. And with the pig's feet, I'm going to cook those very slowly, also in palm oil. And once they're done, I'm going to pull what is edible, what little meat there is. And I'm actually going to garnish those black beans with crawfish tails and the jalapeno with that as well. I think that would be really good. The Jerusalem artichokes, I'm going to make chips. So peel them, thin them slicely, and fry them in a little bit of peanut oil and salt them nicely when they come out. So I'm going to have just Jerusalem artichoke chips and tangerines. Okay, so with the endive, make a salad. So just cut the ends off the endive, fan them out on a platter, and drizzle a little bit of, you have no oil here besides the palm oil, a little bit of extra virgin olive oil down the center. The tangerines, I'm going to pull the sections out and lay those down the center of the endives, and then roast the hazelnuts and crush them, and they go down the center. And That's it. I've used everything except for the baking supplies, the bitter chocolate, the dairy, and the chicken stock was in my, the chicken stock was what I used to cook the beans. Bitter chocolate, baking supplies. Huh. I don't know. I'm just stumped with that part. I'm going to eat the bitter chocolate. This is what you would do. So I'm going to eat the bitter chocolate, and I'm just going to ignore the baking supplies. All right, there we go.
You could bake something.
Not really.
You could have made little empanadas with the crawfish tails or something. So we have an email here, by the way.
Oh, good.
So this is from Elizabeth. Hello, listening while making potato soup. Love the show.
Oh, good.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Petit Louis and Sundays, 12 to 1. Belong to a winner's CSA and received abundant amounts of kohlrabi and turnips. Can you give me some suggestions? Cindy's favorite vegetables.
Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, no, that's... turnips especially I like very much. And duck with turnips is one of my all-time favorite dishes. And that's a great garnish if you want to make confit or if you want to sear a duck breast. With turnips, it's just a matter of seasoning them well, slicing them almost like you would slice them into like orange sections, and roast them slowly. A little bit of dried herb is nice there. Black pepper is nice there. But roast them slowly. And when you go to serve them with... they're better off roasted, chilled, and then warm those slices back up in a little bit of butter. Heat them through and, baste them, serve them with the duck. I think that could be great. Kohlrabi, I will admit, is not my all-time favorite. It does, however, like fry up. It's almost like home fries if you slice it thin and kind of work it that way, almost into something like a hash with a little bit of bacon and a little bit of honey, which maybe sounds kind of wacky, but
it's good.
Done it before and put a poached egg on it, and it was darn tasty.
Okay.
So, anyway, I guess you probably want me to take a look at your chef's challenge.
I think you better. You better get on that.
Yeah, I will. Let's see. Good Lord. Dinner party for 10 people. 20 pieces of U12 shrimp. Thanks for the spec. 20 pieces of sea scallops. 50 cal bag of little neck clams. White wine, lobster stock, olive oil, butter, kosher salt, black pepper, jalapenos, poblanos, cilantro, green tomato, onion, shallot, garlic, a prime rib of beef, Yukon gold potato, and chanterelle mushrooms. So you just make the list of all the stuff that you have for some party you're making later.
So basically, you're not allowed to use anything that isn't on that list.
Okay.
Okay. There you go. That's why I gave the details.
Mm-hmm.
That's why your list is so long.
That list is fine. Well, first thing you got to do is season that roast and get it ready to go. Because the seafood business. We're doing is talking about soup. It's funny. I want to make a great salsa verde for that roast with the jalapenos and the green tomato and the cilantro and the onion and the shallot and the garlic and I need not the dried herbs though. Maybe with the sage. The sage is part of the rub. Sage and garlic is rubbed for that beef. Sage, garlic, and vinegar, and plenty of salt to rub that beef real well. Let it get up. That a little bit, take the chill off of it out of room temperature, and then get it in the oven, brown it off really nicely, and then cook it slowly the rest of the way.
It's bone in.
Excellent. And so while that is roasting, you make it, honestly, a relatively quick soup with you have all kinds of fancy garnishes, because if you open those clams in a lobster stock and sear off the scallop and saute those shrimp, you have a really nice, very simple garnish. And fresh thyme I'd use for the seafood. And a little bit of white wine also in that. But that's an easy one. The Yukon gold potato and the chanterelle mushrooms. The potatoes, I would start as a bit of hash. I would use a little bit of fat from roasting the prime rib of beef to kind of break up that potato and make it into where it's almost like hash browns, but using some of the beef fat. For that, the chanterelles, roast them off to get a lot of the moisture out of there. Roast them with the rosemary. And that's just an easy garnish with that hash that goes on the plate with the slices of the beef, with the salsa verde. What else? Even white asparagus. You're hopeful. It's January. White asparagus. I guess. White asparagus, I guess. You know, I love grilling white asparagus. Just grilling it very simply. You need, well, you said nothing on it that's not on this list is available. So there's not a lemon.
Mm-mm.
There's not a lemon. There's no parmigiano. There's no.
There's okay, not.
No. Is there, there's no olive oil.
You have to peel those asparagus.
Yeah. Oh, this just says olive oil. No, it's as simple as you're going to have to just season them with extra virgin olive oil and salt when they come off the grill, but you have to cook them nice and carefully. And yeah, you have to peel those. Cut them into, cut clever slashes into the darn thing so they look like something when they're on there. But you can make a little, I guess like a warm salad of the warm, of the.
So what are you drinking with your food?
For the prime rib beef, now what I want is sort of giant burgundy with a little bottle age on it, the Clos Vougeot or something like that. That's a Diamond Jim move right there. Although honestly, I tell you what's great. So many of these 15 Cru Beaujolais are so good, and some of the wines from the bigger crus have really good power to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Moulin au Vent would be nice. What else? There's, I mean, there's a lot of things to have with that. The trick is getting the right thing, because that's a rich seafood soup. And it's not Chardonnay that you want. There's a Semillon from South America made by a producer named Mendel in Argentina. That's very, very good. That might be fun with that. Or a Fiano Native makes a very good Falanghina in the south of Italy. I would maybe look at that with that. I think that's all reasonable.
Okay.
Okay.
Didn't you want to talk about something else?
Oh, I wanted to ask you, rice. People can't cook rice. That's the one thing we didn't get to early in the show. So
regular rice?
Just regular rice.
Regular rice.
In about a minute.
My chef taught me how to, Marcelo taught me how to make rice, and it's very simple. You saute an onion in butter until it's soft. You add your rice. You cover the rice with liquid by two fingers.
So that's water or stock?
Water, stock, herbs, saffron, don't care, whatever you want. Make sure it's seasoned properly from the very beginning. You season it from the time you add the liquid. Bring it up to a boil, turn it down on low, set it on the back of the stove, put a lid on it, end of story. It's ready to go.
I mean, turning it off.
Turn it off.
So, okay.
That's it.
That makes sense.
Regular rice.
That makes sense. Well, if you, thanks for listening today. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter, Chef Cindy Wolf, and on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
Mine is The Real Tony Foreman on Instagram. If you want to reach the program via email, as we've been saying, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. And if you want to listen to this or any other episodes of Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine, there are podcasts available on the WYPR website. Just go to the Foreman and Wolf page. Thank you very much for listening.
And happy Sunday.